right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. He's gonna get some free steak.
Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios, this is Late Hits.
Late Hits.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's your host, Patrick Creighton.
Look in my eyes. In a row, my friends, eight in a row. And if you're wondering what eight in a row is, that is the Houston Astros win streak. After they handle business again today against the Oakland Athletics, 7-3 at the dump. Is it okay if we just call the Oakland Coliseum the dump? And it is like the worst stadium in all of baseball, right? They have sewage coming up in the dugouts. Stuff doesn't work. Toilets don't work. It's nasty. Even the A's want out. So can you just call it the dump?
No longer. It is green.
I mean, but we won't call it, you know, what is it officially? Was it like McAfee or whatever the stupid naming rights are for it now? Let's just call it the dump. I think that works better. Astros, I tell you what, this has been a great set of games here, like eight games here for the Astros getting healthy. You know, they went 13-3, then they had that 3-7 stretch, and since then they're 8-0. That has them 20 games over 500 for the first time this season. They banged out 13 hits today, so. They got 13 hits and 7 runs. What is more surprising to you? That of those 13 hits, Alex Bregman had 0? Or that Justin Verlander actually gave up 3 runs?
Verlander.
And 2 homers. And not that it mattered. But, you know, Verlander, 7 innings, 3 runs, no walks, struck out 7. Verlander's ERA actually went up to 1.61 as he is now 9-2. You know, the funny thing is, you know, last night on the network, we were talking about how Jacob DeGrom of the Mets has made 14 starts. It's like a 1.55 ERA, and his record is 4-2. And how he has made 6 starts this year, where he has gone at least 7 innings and given up 1 run or less, and the Mets have lost those games. 6 times he's done that, and the Mets have lost. Not so much the case with Justin Verlander, who is now 9-2. As the Astros, Brian McCann got himself a home run today. Gurriel's up to 17 doubles after missing the early part of the year. Tony Kemp continues to hit. He's at 301. I like Tony Kemp hitting in that 9 spot. We know they're not going to bat him lead off. We know they're not going to bat him 2. It's not going to happen. So if he's not going to bat 1 or 2, batting him 9, that's where to have him. And, you know, for as much as I've not been a fan of how AJ has used the bullpen this year, can't complain too much about the lineups. Astros are hitting. You know, McCann. And here's the funny thing. You take a look at the Astros, and they've got the best run differential in baseball. It's not close. And as much as they've hit lately, Breggs is still only hitting 262. Correa's now up to 272. Reddick is up to 234. Gattis has been on fire. Gattis has been hitting everything and yard. He's hitting 245. To give you an idea of how inconsistent the offense was before, Marwin is up to 246 after a pair of hits today. This is a team that is still finding its stride, and they're 20 games over 500. Now, as much as you can look at the thing with Gattis and say, well, right now Gattis is smoking hot, how long is he going to stay that hot? We know he's streaky. Right now he's on a great streak. How long does it last? Ride it while you can. I mean, as long as he hits, put him in there every day. Who cares? Just keep putting him in there. Tony Kemp's hitting. If, you know, Reddick starts to get back on track, you know, 2-for-5 today. Reddick starts to get back on track. You know, you're starting to see the length in the lineup return. You know, Springer got the day off. He's hitting 290. Altuve is up to 338. He had a pair of hits today and a walk. Astros bats are getting healthy. And this is the part of the year where you look for the Astros to make some hay. They got 29 games before the break. They've got 6 against KC, 7 against Tampa, 3 against Toronto, 2 versus the Arlington Strangers, 4 against the White Sox, 4 more against the A's, and 3 against the Tigers. Those teams have a combined winning percentage of 422. Like, the Astros could legitimately go 24-5. Stick that on top of a current 8-game win streak. They could literally just bludgeon all of those teams. 29 games against bad baseball teams. Seattle, meanwhile, they've played a lot of their soft schedule. You know, the Astros have played the Yanks. They've played the Red Sox. Seattle hasn't played either of those two teams yet. And they're 2-4. Were they now 2-4 against the Astros? 3-5? No, the Astros have beaten them more than not. That four-game series early in the season, the Astros took 3 or 4. I think they're 2-4 against the Astros. All right, but now Seattle gets 10 straight games against the Red Sox and the Yanks. They got 4 at home against Boston. Then they go to the Bronx. Then they go to Fenway. Then they go to Baltimore for 4. Now, Baltimore stinks. But that's the last 4 games of a 10-game road trip where they're going to play the Yanks 3 times and the Sox 3 times. So they might be beat up by the time they get to Baltimore. Then they got 3 more with KC, 6 with the Angels, 6 with the Rockies. Their combined winning percentage is 498. So Seattle has a much tougher 29-game stretch here.
The Astros are 4-2 against the Mariners this
season. All right, so there you go. Seattle 2-4 against your Houston Astros, defending world champions, by the way. Seattle's going to play 29 games with a combined winning percentage of almost 500, and the Astros are 4-22. This is where they make their hay. I'll just tell you, you know, really good teams will have 3-4 runs during a year where they just dominate. And the rest of the year, you play pretty much 500 ball. The Astros did that last year. They had 4 good runs, and then they played 500 ball. Actually, they played 50-52. They had a 13-3 run, you know, about a month ago. Now they've won 8 straight. And you're looking at 29 games versus the dregs of the AL. This is where they separate themselves from everybody else, beating the hell out of really bad baseball teams. That's what good teams do. You win the games you're supposed to win. Teams that are just as good as you, you're probably going to split. But you beat the snot out of the teams that you're supposed to beat up. And this is their chance. We're going to get more into the Astros in a little bit. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Jenna Dial Creech of the Houston Chronicle, who has a lot of details on this breaking story with Texas A&M University and a potential sexual assault scandal that we may only be touching the tip of the iceberg on. She's going to join us next.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, joining us on the hotline right now from the Houston Chronicle is Jenny Dowd Creech. Hey, Jenny, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, thanks for taking a little bit of time with us tonight. Appreciate it. Yeah, I know you're busy.
You bet. You bet.
Hey, so you've got a, you know, a really big story out right now about Texas A&M, mm-hmm. and its issues with how it's enforcing its Title IX.
Right.
How did this come about? Like, what got this started in motion?
Actually, a young woman's tweet is what did it. You had a victim who's gone public now, a victim of sexual assault who reached out to the athletic department when she found out that her assailant, who she knew would be suspended from school, but he came back to school and then was allowed back on the swim team. She reached out wanting to kind of talk to them and see how that had happened. You know, she was a little bit offended by that this young man was allowed to represent the university in athletics after they had found him what they call responsible, which is guilty of sexual assault. And they just sort of dismissed her. The athletic department just sort of dismissed her, and she posted that online, and it immediately went viral. And then it had other women coming forward and saying, "Hey, something similar happened to me, and you know, we demand change. We want better from our university." And now you have a group of 250, I think was around that number, the last I saw of victims of sexual assault from Texas A&M who are speaking out and saying, let's do a better job with our Title IX policies at the university.
All right, 250 people, that's a really big number in, what, 48 mm-hmm. hours? And
yeah, it is. But, you know, it's nothing compared to, and this is not, we've talked about this before, it's not just a Texas A&M problem. I mean, the statistics are out there. One in every five women on a college campus will be sexually assaulted. I mean, those are the numbers. So there's definitely more. These are women who went through the process, went through the timeline process, and were unhappy with how it turned out.
And in this particular case, this victim who came forward, the guy who was found responsible for sexual assault on her, his punishment was he was suspended for a semester.
Correct. That is correct. Both parties did sign and agree to that. I think it's just a matter of she realized a year and a half later she sees his name on the swim roster and she had questions about that, as I think a lot of people would. If you're suspended from a school for sexual misconduct, should you be allowed back on a team? And it's not necessarily that Texas A&M broke a policy here. It's the fact that they don't have one. And I think that's the conversation we need to be having. If you're guilty or found guilty of any kind of misconduct, like if this kid had cheated on a test, I guarantee you he wouldn't be A, back at school, and B, on the swim team. So I think there have to be real consequences for your actions. And a lot of people are bashing this girl for coming forward later, for having agreed to the suspension. She didn't know she couldn't agree to it. They said that was his punishment. She said, okay. She didn't know she could argue it, you know. But I think she has a fair point in the fact that she reached out to the swim team and said, hey, why is this kid allowed to compete? This boy raped me. And I think that it is fair for universities to look at that and think about the kind of people that they have representing their universities when it comes to teams and athletics.
Jandal Creech of the Houston Chronicle with us on the hotline. Jenny, I thought that was an incredible point that you made. If this young man had been, you know, been found responsible for cheating on a test,
mm-hmm.
you know, he'd be expelled.
Yeah.
Found responsible for sexual assault, and you get a semester off, so you mm-hmm. don't have to write that check. And then when you come back, everything's all good.
Exactly. I mean, he got it, and he, there was no consequence when it came to the swim team, which I do believe, as hard as these athletes work, as much as we pay attention to them, it is a privilege to be able to play college athletics. It is. So, yes, you get a second chance, you get to come back to school. I don't necessarily believe that you should be allowed back on a team, whether it's the swim team, the football team, or anything else. And, you know, and he's back, and not only he's back, he didn't lose any eligibility. They just gave him a red shirt while he was out.
Wait, so while he was suspended, they gave him a red shirt
mm-hmm.
instead of having him lose a half a year of eligibility?
That is correct.
Now I understand why people get so angry about this stuff. It's
well,
the punishments are non-existent.
It's very mixed. A lot of people are angry about it. And then what we see a little more of, what I see a little more of, is then a lot of victim blaming. She did this to herself. Some of their, you know, according to the documents in the Title IX report, which she made public, you know, she did consent to some things that happened, but she didn't consent to all of them. So people are blaming her. Well, you shouldn't have gotten yourself in that situation. They met on Tinder. People are saying, well, if you meet someone on Tinder, you deserve this, which is beyond me how you can say that.
Apparently everyone on Tinder is a rapist.
Apparently so. Apparently that's what you get, which is absurd. So I think that there's also, anytime I write anything like this, you know, there's a lot of societal questions that I have. There's a lot of victim blaming and shaming. I will say this. I have received a lot of, from victims and just from former and current A&M students that still love their university. They just want to see change. And it looks like A&M is taking this seriously and doing so quickly. And I really hope that that's a good sign for what's to come.
Well, that would be different than what Baylor did.
Yeah, I really think A&M, from what I can tell, the school has reached out to some of these women and does want to make change. I also talked to a young woman today who shared her story where Title IX worked out well for her. She also had a criminal case, and nothing happened with that. But her Title IX case, the young man was expelled from school. But to her, she's like, well, my problem is, yeah, it works great for me. It needs to work the same for everyone else. There needs to be transparency and consistency, and we have to do a job for every woman who goes through this.
Jane Dial Creech, Houston Chronicle, with us on the hotline. Now, Jane, Title IX, you know, it's not the same as, you know, like a court of law.
Mm-hmm.
What,
that's right.
What is the requirement for Title IX as far as, for like, if you're saying someone is responsible, they're not responsible, you know, what is the burden of proof in Title IX?
So they'll have a hearing with, and there's usually a panel that's put together of unbiased group of people, usually 3 to 4 people. They hear both sides. Both sides can present evidence. In some cases, that might be text messages that have been exchanged. If the girl had a rape kit taken, you could do that. If she went to counseling and there were notes or whatever, and, you know, the guy, the same thing. If he has text messages or he has any kind of proof that he wants to present, they both tell their stories multiple times. And then this group of people makes a determination on if, you know, someone is responsible for any kind of harassment. Title IX protects both genders from any unfair treatment. And one of the things that happens certainly is if you're sexually assaulted or sexually harassed, that's what the Title IX office is there for. It is, I think there's some people that are confused. Title IX on campuses is completely different from a criminal trial, and a lot of these victims have both. They go to the police and they go to Title IX. Going to the police doesn't mean that anything will happen at the school. Going to the school doesn't mean that any charges would be filed legally. Most people try to do both if they can.
So it's almost like a civil case handled specifically for the university.
Correct. Exactly. And then the university can decide how they want to handle it. And What we're seeing now is just there's a lot of inconsistencies in the way that A&M has handled these cases, and there probably needs to be some policy review saying, okay, if you're found responsible of this, X, Y, and Z are going to happen. Once you make things a little more black and white, once people know what their consequences are, you're going to start seeing a decline in behavior like this.
You know, one of the things that you had said is that A&M has reached out to the victims, that they're trying to move, you know, they're trying to get things right and move forward with it. Because to me, one of the biggest issues with the Baylor situation is they kept trying to lie and hide and cover it up.
Exactly. There was too many people there that, you know, and the Baylor thing is different too, as in they were trying to cover up things as they were happening. I don't believe that there was a lot of malice from A&M. I just think that they probably can look at the way things are and say, we could do better. We didn't include anything with athletics. I do think the swim coach should probably, you know, consider who he has on his team. If I were a swim coach, if someone came back after being suspended for anything, for any kind of misconduct, I'm not sure I'd want that person on my team. I might give that spot to someone else. So I think that this is just one of those cases where it's important to look at the policies in place and say, how can we do a better job? Because people are slipping through the cracks, and it isn't fair. And, you know, this boy, at the end of the day, by definition, raped somebody and is allowed to just come back as if nothing ever happened.
Yeah, and obviously you don't want to send – this kind of almost sends a message of, well, you know, our athletics departments, they're more important than the safety of women. And I don't think that's the message they want to send.
Right. Yeah, and I, like I said, I'm not sure that there's anyone like at Baylor where you saw people actually mishandling these cases. I think probably things slipped through the cracks. I think the fact that he went through Title IX, they closed the case, they moved on, nobody paid attention when he came back and rejoined the swim team when maybe they should have. And this is a really good example of why you have to follow up with these things, why you have to look at this, and why you have to do better.
Jane Dial Creech, Houston Chronicle, with us on the hotline. Follow her on Twitter at Jenny Dial Creech. Jenny, I appreciate your time tonight. I know that you are a busy mom, so I appreciate that you had some time with us. I know it's a little bit late, but thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, Jenny Dial Creech of the Chronicle with us on the hotline. We'll get back into the Astros, and of course, we've got LeBron watch to get into, and you know, Are the Rockets actually better off just keeping Ryan Anderson instead of trying to move him? Get into all this stuff next. Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
All right, we'll get into some Texans later on, but Benardrick McKinney, 5 years, $50 million on the extension, $21 million guaranteed. Coming down by the last 15 minutes or so, the Texans and Benardrick McKinney, five-year extension. He's in the final year of his deal. So, a little nice payday there for Mr. McKinney. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line. Houston Astros, who is the guy you want them to add? You know, do they need to add a closer? Do they need to add a bat? Do they need to add both? Because I think we're all pretty comfortable with the rotation. What's the move you want to see the Astros make? 713-780-3776. Terrence has a question about A&M. What's up, Terrence?
Hey, how's it going today, Patrick?
Doing all right, brother. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to say, hey, love the show and everything. And I love that interview just now. And, but I have some questions more like, you know, because besides the Title IX issue and everything, I think that the ball dropped on everything just from human decency, you know? What kind of coach will take a player back and put them on a team in the first place? Secondly, when you suspend this guy, why would you give him a blanket ride where he didn't lose any eligibility? He should not have even, I mean, if he was going to go to school again, I mean, you can't take nobody's education, but to have them on your team and everything, you'd be like, look, forget eligibility. You lose it all. You know, that it is what it is. You got caught, things happen. And hey, guess what? You need to pursue a different avenue. You know, I'm never going to say a person can't make no money, you know, because sometimes people could change. And you might end up with a family, and you got to be able to provide for them. But as for this line of work that you was trying to do, it's done. It should be cut off right there at the heels, you know. And the other part is, I mean, this whole Title IX thing, did she have a lawyer? Did she have some type of people advising her? I'm not mad at the woman because guess what? You know what? This is what she should have done. You know, she did right. She was misled without them maybe lying to her, but the opinion about everything on how everything was going to happen, she was actually misled, you know?
Well, Terrence, so this is part of this.
I applaud her for coming out to say what she had to say,
Terrence,
and putting light on the situation.
Terrence, this is why the story is out, all right, is that this isn't the right way to handle things. Having a guy miss one semester for a sexual assault, and then he goes right back to school like there's nothing for it, and then the athletic department gave him a red shirt. Yeah, this is why it's a story, because people want A&M to do better than that. That's why it's a story. And, you know, generally in Title IX, no, you don't have a lawyer. It's just within the confines of the university. So, no, she probably didn't have, any kind of real representation or guidance. It's just whatever the school told her. That's what the problems are. That's why it's a story. And that's why so many people are coming forward now that they want Texas A&M to redo the way they handle these cases, to be more strict about how they do it, to have punishment that has a little bit of teeth to it. You heard Jenny say, how does the swim coach take this kid back? First of all, how do they give him a red shirt and then take him back? See, these are, you know, this is the secondary stuff after he got the suspension. To then go out of your way to protect the kid's eligibility and bring him, welcome him back to the team like it's no big deal. These are the issues. And this is why, you know, Jenny's wrote this story. This is why, you know, people want A&M to do better and revise the way they handle Title IX cases. This is the reason. Appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us tonight. You know, it's important, you know, and I think, you know, Terrence got his head in the right spot. You know, like, how does that happen? Well, it happened because nobody ever said it shouldn't. And this young woman speaking up is saying, hey, this shouldn't happen. And it always takes that one person to be brave enough to come forward that first time. And then you start to see so many more people come forward and say, hey, that happened to me too. Hey, that happened to me too. People are afraid to be the first voice of dissent. And when there's somebody else who will be that first voice of dissent, they feel more comfortable. Okay, they need some kind of comfort zone to be able to tell their story, because nobody wants to relive a sexual assault. Nobody wants to tell the world that's what they went through. It doesn't matter that it's not a woman's fault. So many times you see they feel like some sort of guilt. They didn't do anything wrong, but they still feel like ashamed or guilt, and they shouldn't. But we're a society that has made them feel that way because so much of our society, the very first thing we want to do is blame the person who got attacked. Oh, well, you shouldn't have been there. Last I checked, you should be able to freely be able to go wherever the heck you want without being assaulted. Well, you shouldn't have been there. Well, you shouldn't have talked to that guy. You shouldn't have been online. You shouldn't have this. You shouldn't have that. You know, if we go by that, then nobody ever leaves their house ever. We all sit in solitude. We never have children, and we all die out in 50 years. Hell, faster than that, because we never leave to actually go get food, so we all starve to death. The you shouldn't have is like the laziest take in the world. Well, you shouldn't have been on Tinder. Well, it's called Tinder. It's not called Rate Me.
I don't know. I just went to a pretty badass wedding last month from a couple that met on Tinder. So,
people who, one of the works here.
Yeah.
And they had cookies. And he had a giant head, which is the funniest thing
ever. Eight-course meal.
Dude, what an eight-course meal. Dude, John's wedding was pretty cool. I did not know they met on Tinder until they were talking about it at the wedding.
Oh, yeah. It's a pretty known story.
Yeah, well,
I wish LeBron would have worn the shorts in the finals. I mean, earlier in the playoffs, so I could have worn said shorts to the wedding.
Oh, that way it could have been an established style. Yeah. You could have rolled with it.
Now I have to find other weddings to go to so I can wear those shorts.
Well, I do not intend on ever getting married again. Once was enough. That's it.
Everyone else is married.
Well, that's not true.
Everyone here, yeah.
No. How many guys here are single? Nick's not married.
Nick and Dell, pretty much, I think.
Dell's not married.
Yeah, that's about it.
Tyler's not married.
Oh, yeah, Tyler as well, yeah. I don't think either any of them are... no. Yeah, it's...
All the young guys are single. What other guys are young that are... Who's young and married?
That's a good question. I don't think anyone is. Shay's not married. Bobby's not married. I'm certainly not married.
Shay, I think, will be the last one to get married. He's got to do something with that bowl on his head. Once he gets rid of that and has like a real haircut, maybe. But definitely not whatever the hell that mop on his head is. That is not going to fly. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. It's HR and P listener line. What's the move you want the Astros to make? We'll get into that. And are the Rockets better off just keeping Ryan Anderson? It's next.
ESPN 97.5. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
I just saw Marvin Bagley III is going to sign with Puma. And the last person to sign with Puma was Vince Carter. When he first came into the league, like 88.
It has been a minute since they've signed an athlete, but it's big in like the fashion community now. Puma's making a comeback.
Puma's making a comeback, huh?
It is. I don't know athletically if it is. I can't think of the last time they signed a basketball player.
I say, I don't know that I've seen Puma basketball sneakers.
I'm sure they exist, but I don't think.
Don't they just kind of make like loafers?
No, they make
sneakers that you don't actually run in. You know, aren't they, like, I almost consider them to be like Skechers, you know, like, you don't buy Skechers to actually, you know, play sports. You just buy them to, like, walk in or, like, knock around or, like, you know, nothing important, just regular casual wear. Are you looking up Puma shoes now?
No, I'm not. I'm
like, are you looking them up? All right, 713-780-3776. I'm going to give you two questions. Number one. Who's the guy the Astros have to trade for? Number two, should the Rockets just keep Ryan Anderson? Start with the Astros for now. Because again, 20 games over 500, 45-25. They're on an 8-game win streak. They've got 29 games in a row here leading into the All-Star break against just bad baseball teams. The Rangers are 27-43. The A's are a game under at 34-35. The Royals are 22-46. The White Sox are 24-43. The Jays are 30-38. The Rays are 32-35. Number of those teams with a positive run differential, zero. Zero. Not one of those teams are even kind of decent. So this is where the Astros make their hay. You know, guys that you're concerned about. Are you concerned about Reddick? Well, he had a couple of hits today. You're starting to get that average up. Are you concerned about Brian McCann? Because what is he hitting? 215. I think after today, he's up to 216. I wouldn't really be that worried about McCann, though, to be honest with you. I mean, McCann's probably going to hit 240 this year. That's what he does. But when he hits 240, his on base is like 340. So I'm not worried about McCann. You know, am I worried about Gattis? Gattis has been red hot. My concern is when he cools off, how cold is that streak going to be? We know Gattis is really streaky. Ride him like hell while he's hot. But when he hits a cold streak, man, it's going to be cold. That's just how he is. So, you know, I'd like to see them get another bat. Want to give them a little bit of flexibility there. It's not a must. It'd be nice. I think the must is in the bullpen. I think it's pretty clear that A.J. Hinch doesn't really trust Ken Giles. He uses Giles in non-save situations way too often. I think Rondon is starting to gain the trust of the manager in the ninth inning. And Rondon, like I said, when they signed Rondon, I thought it was a good sign because he's a guy who has closing experience. You know, Rondon has been responsible for the ninth inning before. And, you know, so is Joe Smith, who, you know, happens to be on the DL. But both of those guys, the reason why I thought both of those signings were good signings is because they're both guys who have had some sort of ninth inning duty in the past. Now, Rondon has been a primary closer in the past. Rondon's had 29-30 save seasons. So he's a guy that has been successful in that role before. That doesn't mean that that's the guy that I want pitching game 7 of the ALCS against the Yankees in the bottom of the ninth. No, he's had some success. He's had some non-success there too. But I think if you got to go to him for stretches, you're okay. To me, the answer is Kelvin Herrera. Now, the question becomes, will the Astros pay what will probably be a pretty strong premium for Kelvin Herrera, who has pretty much established himself as an elite-tier closer? Herrera now is in the conversation with guys like Craig Kimbrell when you say, who's the best closer in baseball? Herrera is now in that conversation. And he pitches on a bad baseball team that is going absolutely nowhere. And they have no minor league talent. So Herrera is going to be a guy that the Royals are going to be looking for as big a ransom as they can get. Herrera this year is 1-1 with 14 saves. He's got a 1.05 ERA. He's got an 0.82 whip, 25 2/3. He's given up 3 earned runs. And he's got a 22-2 strikeout-to-walk ratio. Those are dominant numbers. He doesn't come in and blow everyone away. He doesn't have to, but gets a good number of strikeouts. But you're talking about door shutter. The only thing I'd be, you know, a little concerned about is, you know, he hasn't been the guy in the playoffs. Now, he has playoff experience. He was on their World Series team. He just wasn't the closer on the World Series team. But he's pitched in the postseason. He knows what it's about. I'd feel good bringing that guy on. Yes, he's in the last year of a deal. It pays him a little less than $8 million. He's probably going to get a really good chunk of change next year. Realistically, the Astros could pay him. The Astros could absolutely re-sign him. And if it's $12 million, if it's $14 million, whatever, the Astros will have the money. I hope that by now everyone is past the point of the Astros can't afford to sign X, Y, or Z. Like, that's all nonsense. Do not for one second think that the Astros don't have money. Astros have plenty of money. They're just smart about how they use it. And you know what? If Herrera costs $14 million, well, Dallas Keuchel's probably not going to be back next year. That's $13.5 million. Tony Sipp's not going to be back next year. That's six more. They'll have money. Don't even sweat that. The problem is if it's not Herrera, where do you go? You know, last year when the Astros were looking for a starter, the guy I wanted starting in May was Verlander because they didn't like the other options. I mean, they weren't awful pitchers. They just weren't. If you're the Astros and you're talking about, you know, going to the World Series, you don't want to pay for a guy who's, well, he's okay. No, I want somebody who's better than what I got. I want somebody who's a proven commodity. I want somebody who's a boss. So I wanted Verlander. I wanted a real ace. Okay, not up and down Sonny Gray. I wanted an ace. I wanted Verlander. And they found a way to make it happen. You know, if I'm going to the bullpen, I want an ace. I want Herrera. I don't want, you know, just some random guy who's kind of okay, who's probably not any better than Giles or Rondon. I don't want another guy just like the guys I have. The problem is, if it's not Herrera, there's not a lot of choices out there. There's not a lot of guys who are, like, legit better than what you have and available. You know, Jurys Familia started off the year pitching like a monster and then wound up on the DL. So now, you know, you got to see that Familia is going to be healthy before you're going to pull a trade with the Mets for Jurys Familia. As another guy who's got, you know, postseason experience, he's been there. And Familia can be a pretty good reliever. He'd be better than what they have. He'd be cheaper than Herrera as far as terms as what it would cost to get him. He's definitely not going back to the Mets next year. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Familia will definitely not be on the Mets. But you got to see that he's healthy. You know, they almost had a deal for Zach Britton last year before Peter Angelos put the kibosh on it because he wanted to get more. Well, then Britton went and ruptured his Achilles. You know, this, I think it was this past weekend, Britton was supposed to make back-to-back outings in the minors for the first time. You know, if he hasn't been activated yet, he will be shortly. But, you know, you're going to have, what, 6.5, 7 weeks to see whether or not Zach Britton is back and healthy. Now, there's no guarantee. Now, he's another guy who, you know, coming off that injury, Britton would be cheap. Now, Britton's been a dominant reliever. But will he be that this year coming off that injury? You know, you got about 6 weeks to see, you know, what he's got. But you understand what I'm saying here. There's Herrera, who is a total door slammer. And then you got two guys in Familia and Britton who can be door slammers, but they both have injury concerns. Well, I don't want to pay top dollar for an injury concern. I'd rather just pay top dollar to get the best. And maybe I don't have to pay the full top dollar, but I still want the best. That's why I want Herrera. People who talk about Brad Hand, I don't think Brad Hand's going to be available. You know, people are like, oh, well, San Diego stinks, so, you know, I'm going to go Brad Hand. Well, Brad Hand has a very team-friendly deal, and he's under team control for three more years. The Padres have no incentive to deal him because he's cheap and he's under control. There's no reason to trade that guy. It's like the Mets when you hear them talk about, oh, they'll trade Jacob deGrom or trade Noah Syndergaard. What idiot would do that? You don't trade guys who are young, cheap, and under control and are bosses. You trade the older guys who are making more money, who are vets, and pawn them off for teams and let them be depth or fill in a hole for a team that's trying to make a run. You don't give away your young, cheap, under control talent. That's stupid. It's baseball suicide. So, no, I don't think Brad Hand is going anywhere. That's why, for me, it's Kelvin Herrera. That's it. That's the guy. It's going to cost a lot. Make it happen. That's the guy who locks down the back of your pen. All right. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line. Should the Rockets just keep Ryan Anderson? Answer's probably going to surprise you. It's next.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.